Hey, welcome to Men Talking Mindfulness, everybody. We are excited to speak to our guest today, Remy Adeleke. He's one of the most inspiring guests we've had on our show to date. I thought there isn't a better and more enticing way to start the show than to talk about some of the great things Remy has accomplished. Check out this guy's resume, and he's still in his 40s. Remy was born into a wealthy, prominent family in Lagos, Nigeria. His father, due to corruption within the Nigerian and Lagos government, ended up losing all their wealth, and he sadly died when Remy was 5. Now penniless, Remy, his mother, and brother moved to the United States and settled into the rough side of the Bronx. Growing up on the streets, Remy witnessed a drive-by shooting, was beat up by some local gangbangers, got in trouble with the law on more than one occasion, ran and profited off a cell phone scam that involved local drug dealers. He lost all that money too. He heard the calling and joined the U.S. military and became a Navy SEAL, Class 266. Remy endured Hell Week twice due to a medical rollback, and as a SEAL, he eventually deployed to Iraq. Remy found God, learned to meditate, and now works as an actor and filmmaker in Hollywood. And also worked with Michael Bay. He is married to a pediatrician, and together they have 4 kids. In 2019, he published Transformed, a Navy SEAL's unlikely journey from the throne of Africa to the streets of the Bronx to defying all odds. And that book has racked up over 1,000 views on Amazon. His latest accomplishment was this September 2022, where he released the film The Unexpected that brings awareness to the growing problems of human trafficking. Wow. Welcome to Men Talking Mindfulness, everybody. Each week, my co-host John McCaskill over there and I break down and demystify an aspect of mindfulness and make it meaningful to you. We're excited to speak with Remy today and help us understand what it means and what it takes to never give up. We are really stoked for this episode, but before we jump in, I'd like to tell you about an opportunity we have for you to get to know and practice mindfulness. John, good to see you. Remy, we're going to get to you in a second. Thank you guys for being here today. And awesome.
Yeah, I'll tell you quickly. So we continue to work with our good friend, Dr. Teresa Larson from Movement RX. And now we are bringing you the new and improved 90-day movement and mindfulness experience. It was formerly 21 days. Now it's a full 90 days. And we'll check out we'll put the link in the show notes. But for you, those who are listening right now, it's movement-rx.com/mindfulness-experience. And then you can use the code M2100 to get $100 off that plan. Now we're going to jump into our normal practice. We're just going to do a simple 5 breath practice to calm ourselves down, get grounded, and get ready for the show so that we are focused for our wonderful guest Remy here. All right, so if you're watching now or if you're listening later, get into a position that is comfortable and safe for you. And if closing your eyes is comfortable, go ahead. I invite you to do that. Otherwise, just leave them open. And let's bring our attention to our breath, noticing the physical sensation of the breath. Breathing in, filling your lungs up all the way. Hold at the top and release. 1, holding empty at the bottom. Deep breath in. Hold and release. 2, holding empty at the bottom. Deep breath in. Filling all the way up. Hold and relax. 3, holding empty at the bottom. 2 more. Deep breath in. Hold. Let it go, let it go, let it go. 4, last one, deep breath in. Hold at the top and release, release, release. Now just go ahead and bring some movement back into your body and we are set. Remy. Again, welcome to the show, brother. So honored to have you here with us.
Hey, thank you guys so much for having me. Such an honor and blessing to share on your platform, brothers.
Thank you. Thank you. And we know it's early there. I know you're on family vacation in Hawaii, and we owe you a bigger and even bigger thank you for being with us today during your vacation. And please thank your family for us as well.
All good.
Right on, man. Well, that all said, you've led a life that multiple books could be written on. But we're here to talk about mindfulness and never giving up. Yeah. At any point in the journey, we briefly ran through above. I know it certainly was not as brief as what we just ran through. But at any point, you could have given up and nobody would have thought any less of you. What is it that kept you going, and what is it that inspires you to continue doing more and more every day?
Well, that answer to the second part of that question changes over time. But I would say initially, I had a deep-rooted emotional reason why, you know, and that wasn't something that I was consciously aware of until later in life, where I look back and I ask myself at times, like, how'd you get through like this stuff you were doing in the Bronx? Like, how'd you get through like the whole buds and seal? Like, how'd you get through all of the stuff, even the battles you face today? And it always goes back to, I know my why. And it's a deep rooted emotional reason why. It's not a superficial why. And that why changes, you know, for every situation and every circumstance for me, right? So that's the first answer. The second answer is my mom. You know, Will, you shared a big part of my story, but when my mom, when my dad died, and my mom went from rich, like literally having everything, traveling the world, you know, housekeepers, cooks, nannies, living on a compound, having it all, to having nothing, she could have easily quit. She could have found a guy to marry, because my mom is a very attractive woman. You know, she's 70 now, but everybody thinks she's in her 40s because she's like a fitness guru on social media.
Nice.
But she didn't go that route. You know, she worked three jobs. She would always take, you know, jobs when she could. She would get up early in the morning, there were 18 floors in our building. She would run the steps up and down for a workout because she couldn't afford to go to the gym. She would come back, make breakfast for my brother and I, go take the train to the South Bronx where she taught elementary school, come back from that day, work her second job, prepare school dinner and help my brother and I with homework, and then work her third job. You know, so my mom was just relentless, and she was the model of perseverance and not quitting. And when you live with somebody like that, especially in your early years, that just becomes a part of your nature, just, you know, through osmosis or whatever you call it. It just, you know, it just becomes a part of who you are. And that, you know, to this day, I credit everything I am to my mom and the examples that she gave my brother-in-law.
Amazing. I have so one thing I really enjoyed. You can hear me, yeah? You got my mic's
on?
Okay, good. Sorry. Because I know Remy's beeping over there in Hawaii. I got sounds over here in New York City, so there's a lot of activity.
It's beautiful.
But one thing I really enjoyed, Remy, about your mother and how it kind of, there's like a, it really seemed to help you throughout your life, and I love to hear you talk about it, is the fact that she had you writing at a young age.
Here you are,
like, you know, you know, that writing helped you, that whole English, you know, you almost failed high school, right? But because of that at work ethic, and then you wrote a book, and then you just finished the film. How much is that, just that one little piece that, or like more about your mother too, but that one little piece about your mom had really, it seems to have really helped you to transform and to be where you are today.
No, you know, whereas you get some parents who put give a kid a soccer ball at a young age. You get some parents who give a kid a football, or throw the kid in the pool because they want their child to be the next Michael Phelps. My mom was all about writing because she was of the mindset that if you can articulate your thoughts in literary form, you can do anything. Like, you'll never be without a job. And I hated it as a kid, you know, because my mom was relentless. If we, you know, on the weekends, we couldn't go out to play unless we read an article. It was typically a New York Times article or a book sometimes if it was a summertime. And we wrote like a professional report on the article or the book. And during the summer, like I said, we couldn't go outside during the Monday through Friday until that was done. Weekends, it was a constant thing on the weekends, even when we were in school. And my mom, as mentioned, was relentless. If the reports weren't near perfect, like literally perfect, she would make us pick another article and start all over again, like all over again.
Wow.
And you know, I hated it because I'm a kid and I want to go out and play, you know. But again, my mom preached excellence. And fast forward to years, you know, later, that seed, you know, was well worth planting, because when I got into the teams, there's a job called human, and I'll just kind of leave it there. That's the title of it. And which stands for human intelligence. And there is a tradecraft / espionage side to it. But there's also a component that involves writing. Everything that you do outside has to be documented when you come into your skiff. And a lot of guys, team guys, shied away from that job because of the writing. Guys didn't want to, you know, get back from an op or get back from a meeting with a source. And in their downtime, have to write these long reports. But I was all, it was just like, I don't mind. I've been doing this since I was a kid. it's like, yeah, I'll go write, you know, and that served me well. And obviously, you know, doing that in the SEAL teams, it really helped me. I would say elevated my visual writing, because we had to learn how to write in a way where somebody could pick up the report or a report 10 years from now, whether it was somebody in an agency or general or whoever, and read that report as though the events happened that day that they're reading it. So it required a lot of visual writing, whereas the writing my mom had me write was more more from a documentary type standpoint. And so I was able to, you know, elevate my writing skills via the SEAL teams with the foundational principles that I learned from my mom. And then, you know, obviously going to writing films and books and all other stuff, because I write a lot of different things now. That I write. Yeah.
And you wrote your book completely on your own, ghostwriter, which I love. I also understand ghostwriters, but your book was fantastic. Now, my question to you is are your four kids all having to write reports before they go play on the choir?
You know what? My wife won't let me. Interestingly, my oldest son is dyslexic, so. You know, we have him in a special, I don't want to call it special needs, but he has a teacher. He has a private teacher that specializes with kids with learning disabilities. So I can't quite do that with him, even though I would like to. My second oldest son, he's very smart. He's brilliant. He's like total opposite of my first son, because obviously my first son has a learning disability. But he gets it, man. That dude, like, he picks up books and reads them and does it all on his own. So who knows? Maybe, you know, in the coming years, I'll drop the literary hammer on him.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
What about inspiring others? What would you say to anyone who's listening or watching, basically those who are trying to figure themselves out, maybe overcoming some adversity, some challenge, they're getting frustrated, and they're thinking about giving up? What's your advice to them?
Oh, man, pull up a chair.
We got time, brother. We got time.
Yeah. You know, the first thing I would say is you have to know your why. You have to know, okay, whatever it is that you're aiming towards, before you even start the process of aiming, you need to know, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Because the thing is, on your journey towards your dream or whatever it is that you want to do, you know, you're going to face adversity, you know? And I say this about dreams. It wouldn't be called a dream if it was easy. You know, it's called a dream because a dream is something that's hard to attain. And, you know, and so because of that, you have to know your why and what's going to, and so when you face adversity, when you face failure, when you face a setback, when, you know, you make a mistake, when somebody who you thought was going to be loyal and help you out backstabs you and sets you back further, when those things happen, your why will anchor you. It'll act as an anchor that will keep you in place and keep you focused on the task at hand. Whereas if you don't have a deep-rooted emotional reason as to why you want to do something, when the winds and storms of life come, you're going to get blown away. So, you know, that's my first thing that I try to tell everybody. I know it sounds simplistic, but it works. It works because it's something that you could always come back to. On the same note, my next thing that I tell people is set reference points by doing hard things. You know, and for example, when I was training for Buds, the first and second time, I ran on a treadmill because I learned that when I was running outside, as I got tired, you know, my body would just naturally adjust to the fatigue, to the pounding, to all of these things. And you don't realize you're slowing down, but you're actually slowing down because your body's trying to adjust to the discomfort, right? But when you're on a treadmill and you put that treadmill on 9.3 or 9.5, you can't slow down unless you physically push that button. You have to make a decision. Your mind has to take control of your body and make the decision to push the decreased speed button, right? And so running on a treadmill, in my opinion, is especially when it's a hard run, or even you know, one thing I still do to this day is I get on the treadmill and I put on a 15 degree incline. Damn. And I do that for an hour. And I put it, and it's a fast walk, man. It's painful, brother. I tell you, every person I put on this incline treadmill workout, and they do it consistently, they all lose weight. Like because you're soaked in sweat. It's grueling, man.
And going home and doing that today.
Yeah. And I tell people, you know, start where you are. If you're like, you know, start on, you know, 2.5, but. But don't touch the handrails. That's the kicker. You can't touch the handrails. You got it. And so gradually work your way up to, you know, 3.0 and then 4.0 and then you'll see. Challenge yourself. But I say all that to say, doing that workout for me, whether the run or the incline, it has always set mental reference points for me. So when I'm facing something, for example, when I was in Buds, and the runs didn't bother me. I mean, you know how horrible the runs are, John. Yeah. Like, you know, those conditioning runs, they didn't bother me. The 4-mile time run, that wasn't an issue for me. Like, I was like, I couldn't wait for the 4-mile time run. Even though the conditioning runs sucked, especially the 7 stages of hell run sucked, I wasn't like mentally, I was like, oh, I was on the treadmill doing this for, you know, for X amount of miles. Like, I could keep hanging on. Why? Because I had that reference point. I had those reference points. So, for people who are, you know, have this dream or goal or whatever and they're facing adversity, you know, it's important that before you jump into that, which all comes back to preparation, you do hard things. You challenge yourself. You set those mental reference points. And, you know, another example that could be helpful for, you know, college students or, you know, and it's for the everyday person and maybe, you know, fitness is not a good tool for them when it comes to setting these reference points. I tell college students all the time, they say, hey, how can I get mentally tougher? And I say, hey, when you get an assignment from your professor and that assignment is due in a month, do it in 2 days.
Yeah,
there you go.
Do it in 2 days. Like, crush it in 2 days, stay up all night, just do it in 2 days. I'm not saying you have to do that all the time, but just take that period so that you can take control of setting your mental reference point. So when days, weeks, months, years down the line, when you find yourself in a challenging situation, you could always say, oh, I remember that time I stayed up for, you know, a day straight and did 2 days and just crushed this assignment. That was a long assignment. I did it in 2 days. Right. Instead of doing it in a month. So, you know, that's my second thing is, you know, setting those reference points when you can, so that when, not if, when the challenges come, You could always refer back to, man, I did this a week ago. I did this a month ago. I did this, you know, a year ago. That was 10 times worse. I could do this. You know what I mean? And the third thing I would add, and I could, again, like I said, I pull up a chair because I could talk about this to nauseam. But the third thing I would say along those lines is, you know, positive self-talk.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about your affirmations. Yeah. You used affirmations throughout your lifetime. I mean, through Buds and many, so please, like, talk about or go in a little more detail about that, please. That's really, I think, very helpful for our audience, you know, to hear.
No, 100%. And I'm glad you brought that up, you know, because it's so crazy. When I was writing my book, you know, writing a book, especially about your life, is very therapeutic because you're able to relive things that you've gone through in the past and remember. And it's just a very therapeutic thing. And I didn't realize how much I use self-talk, positive self-talk, my entire life. Even as a kid, I didn't know the tag. I didn't know the label. I just did it. You know what I mean?
And where do you think you got that from? If I can ask, where did that come from? Like your dad or mom? Yeah.
My mom, 100%. Because I remember when we were young kids, like I said, my mom would work all kinds of different jobs. One job that she had was, I don't know if you ever heard of Amway.
And
one job she had was an Amway job, and they had like this Amway conference. It was somewhere, I can't remember. I think it was somewhere in Philadelphia, somewhere, and we drove down for it. And it was a speaker on stage. I mean, it was like tons of people in the crowd. And before he came on stage, this song played called, and it was like, the sky is the limit. You can do whatever you want. Like, literally, the sky is the limit. Like, I never forget. That was the song. Like, it's in my head to this day, right? Yeah. And everybody in the crowd was just screaming at the sky is the limit. You got people in tears, you know what I mean? Like, I can do whatever I want. You know, and there's other parts of the verse as well. But my mom was saying, and again, like, getting that positive affirmation in her head. Like, I remember coming back home, and my mom would just sing that song when things would happen that was, you know, when she faced adversity, she would just say, the sky's the limit. And so, like, I like that. That just, again, watching my mom and how she moved and how she overcame a lot of the challenges that she did, you know, that helped me acquire this skill set of positive self-talk. And you know, we as human beings, we don't realize how the majority of our self-talk throughout the day is often negative.
Right.
Yeah. It's so, it's so a part of our nature to think negative of ourselves or of the circumstance that we're in that we don't realize it, you know, and it can be as simple as, like me and my wife, we're about to do this photo shoot, and my kids, we're about to do the photo shoot here in Hawaii. And it could be like, this shirt doesn't look good on me, or the photo shoot is not going to be good. It could be little simple things that add up throughout the day that, you know, that affect us. And so how do you overcome the negative self-talk that's just naturally a part of our nature? It's going to come like a flood. You have to combat that with positive affirmations, with positive self-talk. And it could be as simple as, today is going to be a good day. I'm going to win. Like, I know this situation sucks, but I've been through worse. Like I'm going to come up with a good plan. Like, and it's, you're not lying to yourself. And that's something that, you know, when I talk about this, like, I always try to tell people, it's like, you're not lying to yourself. You're not going to say, I'm going to be a millionaire by the end of the day today, because that's not going to happen, right? You're giving realistic, positive affirmations that are true, you know. And I have a buddy of mine that he just lost a child, and one thing I've been trying to, you know, I've been trying to counsel him through it and all that. And one thing I've been trying to tell him is that, you know, I can't really relate to that. And, you know, as everybody always says, there's no pain like losing a child. You know, we're not supposed to bury our own children. One thing I've been trying to, you know, say to him in a very delicate way is, you know, there's a blessing and a curse. you know, and I had this conversation with him a couple days ago, and there's a blessing in every curse, excuse me. And he was like, you know what, Remy? He was like, you're right. He was like, maybe, I guess his marriage was rocky at the time with his wife. And he was like, maybe my child wanted me to treat my wife better, you know. And even if it was just that situation, even if it took for, you know, my child to pass away, you know, for me to realize that, like, you know, because it was a newborn baby, and you know, maybe that's what it was for. And I need to essentially be a better husband to my wife. And I'm going, he's like, that's my mandate for the rest of my life. I'm going to be a better husband to my wife, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, there you go. Like, that's an example of finding the blessing and the curse, because it's so easy to find a curse and a blessing. A blessing, something good comes, and we're just like, we kind of like bracing ourselves. When's the bad thing gonna happen? What's gonna happen? That's gonna happen. Like, it's so easy to find the curse and the blessing. It's so hard to find the blessing and the curse. And I truly believe that there always is a blessing and the curse. There always is something out of everything works together, you know, for the good, you know. And I truly believe that's the case. So that's another thing that I say to myself. You know, me and my wife, we just went through a situation while we're here in Hawaii, where our au pair, who's back in San Diego, she's had some mental lapses, just to kind of say the least. And she just had a meltdown, and she quit like 2 days ago while we're here in Hawaii. So that puts us in a situation where I have to fly to Las Vegas next week to speak at a conference. My wife, you know, she's been on vacation, so she has to go back to work to the hospital to see patients. And it's like, where's our childcare situation? And, you know, and my wife was getting stressed out because it happened on her birthday and this and that. And I'm like, you know what, Jesse? Everything happens for a reason. Yeah. Everything happens for a reason. And that's what I was saying to myself. Everything, who knows what you know, because the au pair got into a car accident with our car a few weeks ago, which is led up to the reason why she quit and all of these different things. And who knows, maybe, you know, 2 days from now, 2 days after we got back, she's driving the car, she gets into another car accident with our kids. Or maybe like this happened, maybe something else would happen, and her leaving protected us. Maybe she would have had a meltdown and harmed the kid or something like that. So, you know, everything happens for a reason. So that's another positive affirmation I always say to myself, especially when I'm in a bad situation, whether it's a business situation or a personal situation, whatever it may be, is, hey, there's a purpose behind this. I may not understand it, I may not see it all, but it's going to work out, because it's something, you know, everything happens for a reason.
I love that mind state, and I've got an au pair too, and we should swap stories, man. We've had some drama in the past few weeks with that too.
Oh my god, brother. Nightmare on Elm Street, brother. Nightmare on Elm Street, man. Yeah, we got to talk offline, baby.
What
company are you with, if you don't mind me asking?
I should know that au pair. I'm forgetting the name right now. You probably know better than I.
Ours is called Cultural Care.
Okay.
Yeah. No, the situation, put it this way, the situation is so bad on their end, like the way, and it's the way this au pair is acting, all the crazy the company sent us a settlement agreement and said, we like this, just give you this money so that you can sign it and settle, and so that you don't have to talk about all of the stuff that happened and blah blah. And you know, so that's going to our lawyer, and we're just like, no, there's no way
is this show gonna be an issue?
No, it's not gonna be an issue, because we didn't sign it. We didn't sign anything. Like, we're free and clear. But it's been a horrific situation, man. But it is,
Well, I want to come back to that mindset of where you're focusing on the positive, the blessings and the curse versus the other way around. And I know in your book, you discuss being introduced to meditation. You know, a lot of what you're talking about here is what we talk about quite often on the show, as a mind state, mindfulness, being aware of the things. How has faith and meditation helped you? Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned your friend who was, lost a little one, and he's used that to become a better husband. How has faith and meditation helped you personally, but then also helped you to become a better father and husband?
Oh, I mean, one, I would not be with my wife. I would not have our kids. Like, I would not have the life that I have now without faith and meditation. You know, without having, you know, centered myself and meditated on God and the things that he has for me and the path that he has for me, and just listen, you know, to what I need to do, the decisions I need to make. Before I came to faith, you know, and I made a lot of bad decisions, man. I was just led by my carnal nature, man. But you know, after I came to faith, and then you know, really got into the idea, you know, because you know, one thing, you know, Jesus would always meditate. He would always go away and meditate in prayer and pray, when I found the importance of being able to do that, to clear my mind and focus on, you know, on things above instead of just things below, you know, that gives you so much clarity and it gives you so much guidance so that you can make important decisions, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember before I met my wife, and you guys know this from my book, I was intentionally single for 3 years. Yep. Like, you know, I was just like, you know what? I need to learn how to love God. I need to learn how to love myself. I need to learn how to love people before I can learn how to love a person that I'm potentially spend the rest of my life with. and have kids with and all these things. And you guys see the sun setting behind me.
Yeah, dude, I was just going to say, man, I love that you're speaking about your faith as the sun is rising up over your shoulders. Yeah. It's beautiful,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's awesome. That's, let me know if it's backlighting too much.
It's beautiful. Right,
and so, like, you know, I remember, and you guys know this from my book, but I remember, like, I had left church one Sunday. This is, you know, 3 years after I made the decision to stay single and celibate. And I left church, and I'm like driving, and I'm meditating and praying and meditating, and I hear a voice say, "It's time for you to meet your wife."
Wow!
Like, not meet a girlfriend, not meet a woman. It's time for you to meet your wife. This is 3 years after, like, you know, 3 years after being single, and literally, I was like, "Roger that." I went on Match.com, and I signed up for a 30-day trial, and the last week of my 30-day trial was the first week of my wife's 30-day trial.
Oh, wow.
And we overlapped by a week. She had literally just moved to San Diego from Washington State, where she was, because she had just finished med school and was coming down to San Diego because she got accepted into a residency program in San Diego. And so, you know, just out of all of the times on earth, you know what I mean? Like listening to God and meditating and focusing my mind helped me to pay attention to that moment where I needed to now start my search. And it overlapped by a week. And my wife literally just met, and we met, and we got married 5 months later, you know, and the rest is history. We got four kids. So, you know, I just use that as an example to say, you know, the best thing for me that comes out of prayer and meditation is the decisions that I make. The decisions that I make that lead to a better life, not just a better life for me, a better life for my kids, a better life for my wife, a better life for my employees, a better life for everybody I'm around. If that makes sense.
Absolutely, yeah. 100%.
Yeah, I love it. It's you mentioned a lot in the book about, you know, this voice coming from within, like, join the military. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, reach out to Cecilia, you know, I guess that was kind of, I was thinking like, oh, maybe that's your dad talking to you. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or in some ways. And I guess it was that, like, higher being or that higher power. Yeah. And so, yeah. I mean, what is it like to, or how challenging or difficult, what was it like to begin to listen to that voice and let it kind of carry you forward, or even like trust that voice? Because I know a lot of you know, a lot, we all have that kind of voice from within.
Yeah.
And some of us, we just kind of bat it away and be like, oh, no, I can't do that. And those negative thoughts we talked about earlier kind of infiltrate and keep you away from listening and taking a step in that direction. Can you just touch on that a little bit more?
No, 100%. And because I could barely see myself on camera, so it's too dark.
Need to move just a little bit, Remy.
We want our
audience to see your beautiful face.
You know, this whole area is being blasted by the sun, so I might, if it's not too much of a hassle, I might shift this inside.
Yeah, man.
Oh, good. Thank you. I know. This is a live, raw, uncut, unapologetic, John.
Yeah.
How we roll.
Oh, sorry, guys. Sorry.
No, it's all good, really. This is.
Yeah, I need you guys to go in the other room because Daddy needs to finish this. See, my kids on the bed watching.
Oh, yeah. Hey, kids. Hey. Will and I were taking bets whether the kids would show up.
Exactly.
Thank you. Sorry. Is that better?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there you are.
All right. Sorry. So I apologize.
All good.
I could barely see my now. I can actually see myself. But sorry, what was your question? I apologize.
No, about that, those voices within and taking listening to them, taking a step for towards them, and also trusting them. That's like, was that like a process for you, or something? You know what I mean?
You know, I would say after the first time I listened to the voice and it led to what it led to, I would say then it just became okay for me, because going back to the main point, the first point you brought up, when I heard that voice tell me to join the military, you got to understand that, like I said in my book, the joining the military was totally contrary to everything I was. Okay. I hated the government. I hated the police. I associated anybody in a uniform as the police, whether you were Marine Corps, Navy, Army, whatever. I like my clothes baggy, my hats backwards. I still wear my hat backwards, as you can see. And I was allergic to authority and order. And so, you know, that idea was foreign to me. But, you know, as I said in my book, when I looked around my room and saw how my life had amounted to absolutely nothing, I said, you know, what else do you have? What do you have to lose, Remy? Like, you look at your life. It's a mountain. It's not like, what else are you going to do? So that's when I said, screw it. And as you know from the story, I ended up going to Marine Corps recruiter's office first. He wasn't there, which worked out in my favor. Navy recruiter after that. And that Navy recruiter was the one Navy recruiter that would work for me. I had warrants out for my arrest, which I didn't know. And she, you know, took me to both judges, advocated on my behalf. Got my record expunged, went a step further, fudged the paperwork to sneak me in the Navy. And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have gotten into the Navy. You know, and I say this because I meet young people all the time. They reach out to me on social media and they say things like, hey, I had this misdemeanor, or I had this minor, this violation, and I've been trying to join the military. No recruiter won't touch me. Like, how did you do it? Because I know your story and this and that. And I know that, you had a criminal record and criminal history, but you were able to get in. Like, what can I do? What advice can you give me? And I tell them all the time. I say, you know, it's all about that one recruiter, that one person that's going to believe in you, go above and beyond and do to work contrary to the system to get you in. And I can't get you in. I mean, I had a family member who flew from Georgia to San Diego for me to try to help him get in, because, you know, he got in trouble for having an argument with his girlfriend in the mall, public argument. And he was, you know, he said something he probably shouldn't have said, and he got a misdemeanor charge, and he couldn't get into any branch of service. So, you know, rewinding back to that point is, you know, that, listen, obeying that voice changed the trajectory of my life in a massive way. Because if I didn't join the military, I'd probably be dead or in prison. Again, I had warrants out for my arrest, which I didn't know. Okay. Right. So if I didn't go to the recruiter, I wouldn't have, you know, I wouldn't have found out that I had warrants out for my arrest. I'd probably got picked up somewhere else. And then, you know, ended up, you know, going, you know, jail or prison eventually, right? As a matter of fact, the guy who I used to sell drugs with and run my cell phone scam with, he's still in prison to this day. I still get phone calls, you know, to this day. And as a matter of fact, he was in prison in Philadelphia, got released from Pennsylvania, got released from prison. And then because of some other charges he had in New Jersey, he went back into prison to serve his time in New Jersey. This was the guy that I was running with. We were on the same path together.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I say that to say that obeying that voice led to this exponentially completely different life, you know, which was a good and better life. And so, you know, when I reflect on that, going back to what I mentioned earlier about reference points, you know, and creating reference, I don't think reference points are also just for, hey, I made it through this hard thing, I can make it through this. It's also for, hey, this thing worked this way for me this time. Maybe I should, you know, try and do that again this way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I would say that I use that as a reference point, you know, moving forward in that way as well, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely, man. Like, use a tried and true method, right? And use that to move forward.
And so essentially, sorry, just to close that out.
Oh, yeah.
Clarity. That's what helped me obey the voice moving forward. That's what helped me to, when I heard, felt guidance from God, you know, it was just like, all right, it's coming in the same format and in the same way that it came before, which led to a good thing. So, you know what? I feel it's coming in the same way and it's so same at this time. It can only lead to something good. And you know, and that's just always, it's always been a blessing. You know, it's always
right.
I feel that's part of when you really put yourself on your own path, you know, when you really begin to just be like, this is my life, and you take ownership for your life instead of living, you know, someone else's prescription of how you should be and what you should do and the thing and how you should spend your time. By really being in your own, being on your own two feet and be like, you know what, fuck it. Like, I need to go and do this. And then it's just, it's almost like, I guess it's been also called in some ways, or then the synchronicities begin to happen too. Like, you take that step, you listen to that voice, and it's like, oh boy, and there's a phone call, or there's a person I need to meet. And I think that also comes from, you know, from the heart or through the heart in some ways. Like that's how we kind of connect to the world in a meaningful way if you choose to kind of step a foot on that path and live a meaningful life instead of just a mundane life, if you will, and just kind of doing what everyone else is doing and living in the shadows, you know, instead of living in your light, for sure.
Absolutely.
On that note, you know, in your book, you talk about going back to Nigeria.
Yeah.
And you know, how one, we read the book, but the audience may not have read the book. One, how was that for you? And then two, do you have plans to make any changes or play a role in the transformation of Nigeria in the future?
First part of the question, do I have a chance? I got the second part. What was the first part again?
So how was it being back in Nigeria for you?
Got it. Yeah. You know, being back in Nigeria for me was, it was a combination of, I was disheartened, you know, in part because, you know, to see how the corruption has remained, you know, as soon as I got off the plane, you know, I had customs officers trying to bribe me in order for me to get into the country. You know, I had my brother, my half brother, and I, we were on our way back to the airport and we were pulled over by the police. They raised AK-47s and essentially said, hey, you're not going anywhere until you give us X amount of dollars to get to the airport. So the bribe and just seeing the poverty, the gap, the wealth gap, where you have the extremely poor and you have the extremely rich, to be on the news, because I was on the news there and hear about all the politicians that are still scamming and stealing, you know, millions of dollars. You know, it's just very disheartening, because that's what ultimately killed my dad. You know, my dad, you know, he left Nigeria as a boy, was educated in the West, got his master's and his bachelor's in architecture and engineering. And then he, you know, he established his wealth in the West. He was very successful in the West. And what brought him back to Nigeria was he wanted to go back in order to bring all of his knowledge and expertise to Nigeria, because Nigeria is rich in resources. You got cocoa, you got natural gas, you got oil in abundance, gold. Yeah. all of these resources where Nigeria has the potential to be like the West, you know, to be the hub, you know, of where people do trade and business, you know, as it relates to Africa. And so, you know, for him to go back, you know, after all those years, didn't have to go back, was already wealthy. And for him to be stripped of everything due to corruption, you know, that hurt. And to know my dad's story, and then for me to go back and see that nothing has changed, you know, very, very disheartening. So, you know, that was the first part, but on a lighter side, you know, it was good to see, to breathe the air again, to see the school, the private school that I went to, you know, to meet with my dad's friends and hear more stories about my dad, you know, that I may not have been aware of. That was the lighter and the good side of it.
All right. I had an opportunity in 2010 to go spend a month in Lagos. And then a year before that, I spent a month in Abuja. I couldn't believe, like, you know, it's the seventh most populated country in the world, or Lagos. And Lagos is like 17 million people. I've never seen so many people. But I was there for actually a film program in which we were helping. We were brought in there to teach them to make better films and kind of as a way to kind of battle some of that corruption in politics. And here, like, you're, you know, it's a really rough place, and it's tough to see. You know, it's like people live on like a dollar a day or a dollar a week or something like that. It's really, really awful.
As far as the second part of your question, I don't know if I, as of right now, I don't have a desire to go back and you know, right for wrongs or, you know, or, you know, do any of that stuff. I think, you know, the best way that I can do that is through storytelling. I think that, you know, story has the ability to change lives and save lives. And you know, story has definitely changed and saved my life. And more ways than one. So I would say that the way that I would contribute is through storytelling, you know, like my book Transformed, getting the word out. I've had so many people, not just from Nigeria, but from Africa, who've read my book and they've reached out to me and said, man, this has helped me, encouraged me. Like it makes me want to fight for a better Nigeria. It makes me want. And that's all from story, you know, that's all from story. I've had so many people who have done that. And then even now, you know, I have a film that I wrote called The Chameleon, which is now a book. Book one is going to, it's a thriller book series. And in book one, you know, the main protagonist is very loosely based off of my life. And so we have we have chapters, majority of the book takes place in the present, but we do have flashback chapters where we follow his beginnings in Nigeria. And, and his dad and who his dad was, and I won't give away too much of what his dad was involved in, all these different things. So I was intentional about really capturing capturing the corruption in Nigeria, but showing how it could be overcome. You know, so I really capture that in the book, you know, intentionally as a way to be able to combat the corruption. And even, you know, in the book, you know, it's an espionage action thriller, but there is a political piece to it where, you know, I really try to deal with this idea in a very delicate way, but of division in our country, America. Right, because that's a huge issue in our country right now. Is we're so divided, and I truly believe that it's that division is being drove by politicians who want to keep us divided so that they can keep power and so on and so forth. Yeah, and so I really address that in the book as a way to kind of speak to the audience, say, hey, this is not about Democrat, this is not about Republican, this is not about Libertarian, this is not about Independent. This is about, you know, how can we make decisions that are good for America? How can we put our biases aside and do what's best, not just for our current generation, but for our next generation or our next generation? Like, let's stop the game, right? So, again, how do I deal with, you know, playing a role in hopefully fixing Nigeria, which, there's only with so much I could do as one man? It's through storytelling. How can I, you know, play a role in trying to, you know, dispel as much of the division in this country as I can is through storytelling. How can I, you know, you know, combat human trafficking, which, you know, my film, The Unexpected, is through storytelling, you know, so that's just how I'm trying to, you know, fight back now, is through story.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the Unexpected, and
great flick. Know, really enjoyed it.
Fantastic.
Very well produced. Like very, very well. Yeah. I loved your transitions. I thought that was something unique I haven't seen before. Your transitions going like forward in time, back in time. Excellent. I'm very highly recommend, as well as the book. Yeah, John.
Thank you so much.
So, yeah, I mean, I think you answered a lot of my question there, in that you want to change things through storytelling, and you know, not to ruin it for the audience, but just the brief synopsis is that The Unexpected is about human trafficking, and it's based on a true story, and it's basically shows how we are or can be complicit in human trafficking without even thinking about it, you know, whether it's through organ donors, whether it's through, you know, pornography. That's not what your movie's about, but we can be complicit. I appreciate your making that movie, and I appreciate you using the power of storytelling to affect change.
100%. Yeah.
So I want to go back to your, just for a fun thing. And I also want to be respectful of your time, being that you are on vacation, but going back to your book, which again, for our audience, 100% written by Remy with no ghostwriter. Do you feel the book will be made into a movie? And if so, who would you like to see play you?
Well, that's a great question, because I'm literally in talks and negotiations/talks with a major production company/studio. Well, who has a partnership with them?
Congratulations,
a studio. And they've thank you, man. We've been talking for a couple weeks, and we're finally working that out. We have a big star who I can't mention his name just yet. But who's gonna potentially play me? We haven't.
Michael Williams. I'm just kidding. Michael.
Michael Williams is dead, man. Michael.
No, the guy who did Rocky.
Oh, you mean Michael B. Jordan?
Michael B. Jordan.
No, I'm just kidding. Sorry.
I would say Michael Williams. I'm like, well, Michael K. Williams just died a couple months
ago. Oh yeah, I loved him.
But we're in talks right now. Hopefully, we should have, like, you know, it'll be announced, you know, hopefully the next few weeks once we get through all the paperwork and stuff. So that's
fantastic. Congratulations, man.
You know, I've had a lot of people over the years who wanted to make the film. I've had meetings with so many studios and producers and big name directors about my book rights and turning it into a film. And you know, it's going back to that voice, you know, it was just never right. You know, I had an opportunity with a really big streamer, and a really big, not just producer, but a big actor, female actress actually, who wanted the rights and she wanted to do a film. It just never felt right, you know, and I didn't hear that voice say, this is it. And then finally, you know, I met with this company. This company reached out to me. I guess they found me on YouTube, actually. They were the vice president of the company was scrolling YouTube, and he saw an interview of me on it. He's like, man, this is a crazy story. He's like, this needs to be. He's like, this is Shakespeare. This is what he tells me. He's like, this is Shakespearean. This guy was rich, royalty, and loser. He's like, man, this is Shakespeare. This is real. Yeah. And then he reached out to my agent, and we started talking. And it's just, you know, over the last month, I was just like, man, we had so much in common. Just everything just seems right. I was like, man, this is it. I felt like the voice saying, these are the people you need to partner with. So,
So it's not going to be like Sylvester Stallone, where you end up playing yourself, right? Like
No.
He's the Buds instructor or something.
Not at all. I retired from acting, man. My agent don't like when I say that, but I've retired from acting. Everything for me is writing, directing now, man.
Acting
for me has always been, it's always been my film school. It's always been a way for me to learn how to make a film or make a TV show and kind of reverse engineering it, reading the script, interpreting the script, you know, putting it into developing a character, and taking direction so that way I can know how to give direction and be in the headspace of an actor when I'm directing.
So for closing, like, what can we expect from you next? Or is there something you want to plug or I really highly recommend the book, Unexpected, the film. I was excellent. I watched it last night. But what's next for you, Remy?
Yeah, well, just, you know, right now the unexpected is top of mind, because that's, you know, that's something I'm trying to push out to people so that they can become more aware of what's going on in the world as it relates to human trafficking, specifically organ harvesting. That short film actually got picked up to be a feature film. Gerard Butler. Yeah, his production company picked up the rights. And so we're in development, or we're hopefully be closed with financing on that in the next month and a half or so, because it's going to be a big budget action thriller slash human trafficking with a core message about human trafficking. So it's not going to be like a mindless, you know, action film. It's going to be kind of like the short film. It's an extension of the short film. You got to throw the action in there to put butts in seats. Otherwise, people are not going to want to sit and watch a drama. So we're hopefully closing on financing on that. And hopefully we'll go into production on that first half of next year. As I mentioned earlier, working with my with a production company for the I'm going to be writing the script. So for the book to film, and then got a TV show coming out in January called Special Forces: The Ultimate Test. That's going to be on Fox.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
I'm one of the hosts of that. So that's going to be an epic, epic show. It's one of the biggest shows in the UK, and Fox bought the rights to it, and we shot it in Jordan earlier this in May of this year. So that's going to be airing in January. Fox has a Super Bowl, so they're going to really be promoting that during the playoffs and the Super Bowl. So they're hoping.
Shit, I can't wait to see you on the commercials. Yeah, yeah. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah. And so, I got that. And my book, Chameleon. Chameleon is going to come out next year. We're going to start dropping trailer material and promo material in the coming weeks. But really excited about that.
What's Chameleon about, if you want to share with us?
So Chameleon is an action thriller. It started out as a film. I wrote the screenplay called The Chameleon, a film, and then it got picked up by a big production company. That production company went through rewrites on the script with the production company, and then after that, you know, a buddy of mine in the book world read it and was like, hey, this should be a book series. So it turned into a 3-book deal with HarperCollins William Murrow that I just turned in book one on. But it's a real high level espionage s type book. Nice. It's about it's called part of it is called Black Box. Within Black Box, which is a part of the CIA, you have these different programs. You have Chameleon, which are people who could transpose into other people at the drop of the dime. This is all grounded in reality, so they can't like morph into them, but they act so well that they can become whatever character they need to become. Aberration agent, ghost agents, are people who can get in and out of places, you know, like a ghost, and plant themselves in places in order to get a job. The wind agents are people who could drive any vehicle like a leaf in the wind. And then aberration agents are a combination of ghosts and chameleons, but they go undercover for years, sometimes decades. They live in other countries and do that stuff for years. So this all falls on the black box. And so that's Chameleon. Chameleon is gonna be first book we're coming out with. Yeah.
Very cool, man. You got a lot going on. Like your mom. Yeah.
Exactly.
I'll start writing those papers. You are like just writing and directing all the time.
Yes, wonderful.
Well, Remy, it's been awesome having you, man. Like I said at the beginning, we're just going to wrap it up with a quick breathing exercise just to close out the show, and then we'll be done. Will, I'll turn it over to you, brother. Want to wrap it up?
I just want to say thank you, Remy, and everyone for listening. And let's just take a few of those breaths and just kind of, let some of the wisdom that Remy and what you heard today kind of sink in. So find that seed, ground your feet, maybe your hands. Nice, long, dignified spine. And we'll just close with those 5 breaths that can really help you maybe tap into that voice on the inside a little bit when things are getting a little bit rough out there. So just exhale out the mouth. Gonna take a big, giant balloon breath in. And let that go. And a few more. Inhale big. Let it go. Again, in. Out. Last 2, big breath. Exhale. One more time, inhale. Let it go, 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 go. Awesome. And take a moment, maybe hands over the chest just for a second, and just really thank yourself for putting forth the time today and tapping into this wisdom from our guest Remy and from the show. And you really, you know, you have what it takes. You just got to use those affirmations and surround yourself with people that help to push you forward. And maybe start to meditate a little bit too. Awesome. Good. When you're ready, open those eyes. And Remy, we thank you so much for your time today. And please come back and when your next adventure comes out, we'd love to talk to you and help spread the word.
Absolutely. I appreciate you. Thank you so much, Will. Thank you, John. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, brother. Enjoy your vacation.
And yes,
until
sir.
Next time.
All right, guys.
Peace. Take care. Thanks, Remy. Peace.
Joining us today, we hope you walk away with some new tools and insights to guide you on your life journey. New episodes are being published every week, so please join us again for some meaningful discussion. For more information, please check out mentalkingmindfulness.com.